Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. And Tim, before we actually get into today, we're both pretty pumped,
I think. Yes, we are.
The Generation Z Unfiltered book just came out. Mm-hmm. It's gotten some pretty good response so far in conversations that we're having with folks. I got tweeted yesterday, somebody telling me, loving the book so far.
Yeah.
So that's a really cool feeling.
It's so fun. The last event I did, we actually got to talk about the book, and it sold out immediately. I don't think it's because I'm a great speaker. I think it's because this topic is so much on the minds and hearts of parents, teachers, coaches, employers, anybody that cares about the next generation. They know something's going on, and we need to address these challenges.
Yeah. We were actually just at a conference, and I think I told you about this, but there was I was standing by the book, and somebody walked by, and they picked it up. They were with two of their friends, and they were like, I heard this book's got solutions in it. And so he grabbed two more and handed them to his friends, and they went over to buy it. So I think that feeling, that's exactly what you're talking about, that feeling of this has got solutions in it. It's helping me with a felt need. That's just really exciting for
us. You and I worked very hard at the very beginning. It was over a year ago now to identify what were the biggest challenges Generation Z faces, and we came up with nine. They're probably 900, but nine. And then we were careful to not only research those challenges, but research solutions.
Yes.
So every challenge is a chapter, but then it's followed by a chapter that's got answers.
Yeah.
So I really am encouraged by what came out.
Me too. Well, one of the issues that we were talking about, writing about, thinking about as we were developing this book was not just a new generation of kids, but a new generation of parents. And that's really actually our subject for today. We're talking about this new generation of parents and how they often get termed and thought of because of their activities.
Yeah, so kids have tags and parents have tags.
That's exactly right.
The one chapter was inspired by my drive to work every day. So you and I both drive into this office where we're sitting, the studio. And I drive by a number of bus stops, school bus stops.
Okay.
And there's always clusters of kids out there. But you know what I began to notice? The kids are not alone. There are as many parents, if not more parents, out there as the kids. So a child, maybe a fourth grader, might be out there, but both mom and dad are out there. Now, I love the engagement.
Yeah.
Here's a dad and a mom, probably both working, but they're both with their kiddo as they climb on that bus. But I noticed it's just prevalent all the way there. My drive is much longer because of the bus stops.
Yeah.
And the 5 to 10 minutes it takes just to get all those kids
out of kiss everybody.
And the wave from mom and dad. But then I also noticed, and I'm sure you notice this too, my drive takes longer because either mom and dad are driving their child to school or they've bought a car for their child and the child is now driving to school. So the traffic increases by double, at least in the part of North Atlanta where I live. And it's just a new generation of kids and moms and dads.
It's a new normal. True. And in fact, if you went back 20 or 30 years, these are not things that you would have noticed, right? Even the junior and senior in high school still riding the bus.
Yeah.
Mom and dad is off to work or doing whatever. They would not have been out there at the bus stop. So we're in a new day when it comes to parents. And as with a lot of new realities, it feels like there's always two sides, right?
Yeah.
There's some pros and there's some cons. So I want you to talk about that. This new generation of parents, we're not saying that they're intrinsically bad, right?
No, of course
but
not.
But instead that every new wave sort of has its pros and its cons.
Yeah, two sides of the coin. So I do have mixed emotions about all this. On the one hand, of course, I love the fact that parents today want to be present with their children. These intentional parents spend time and money on tutors and travel sports teams and other activities. In fact, the kids are just busy, busy, busy all the time with all the activities they have. So it's a very intentional. I love the intentionality. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The downside that we're seeing is some of the data is analyzing these parents and they're seeing what's happening. Whether it's out of fear for their safety or to bolster their self-esteem, moms and dads now find time to lobby for their child's success.
Interesting.
This intrusiveness. So let me tell you one swing I've seen from the parents of millennials to the parents of Generation Z. If you remember, Andrew, you're a millennial, okay? You were born in the late 80s.
Yes.
You remember your generation of kids was the first generation that got trophies just for participating.
That's right.
Just show up on the soccer team. Trophy.
Yep. So I had a lot of those.
And we've all made fun of that. Well, now the pendulum has swung to the other side. I think now you don't get a trophy for just participation. It's for performance. The parents are so pushing their child on that travel baseball team.
Yes.
To make the club, make the grade, make the batting average, make whatever, you know, because they're just determined. We have parents in North Alpharetta, where I live just north of Atlanta, that have built sports complexes on the property at home.
Like in the backyard.
By golly, my son's going to do this or my daughter's going to do this. So they get focused. So it's almost an extreme.
Yeah.
At first it was just, everybody's awesome, you know. Now it's, well, you're only awesome if you really come through.
Yeah.
And I think Generation Z feels the pressure by all the intentionality of the parents.
Yeah.
So
it's like we've gone from padding their ego to forcing achievement in some ways.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting trend.
Yeah. So let me summarize it this way. It seems to me like over the course of maybe, let's say, 25 years, we've seen some realities emerge. And listeners, maybe this will be helpful for you to wrap your arms around what the challenge is. You've heard me say this before, Andrew. We risk too little.
Yep.
We rescue too quickly, and we rave too easily. Let me tell you why I think those things exist. We risk too little because we fear for their safety.
Yeah.
We're determined to think that they are just not safe. We rescue too quickly. We fear for their status. What if they don't get the grade to get into the college that they need? And we rave too easily. We fear for their self-esteem. I want my child to have self-esteem. So safety, status, and self-esteem.
All of those fear-based decisions.
Yes, right. And you and I both believe a kid doesn't turn out really well if they're led by leaders who are driven by fear.
Yep.
So we want to change that.
We've seen that time and again, time and again.
Yeah.
You actually use a term that we've both heard both students and adults use about parents. You said the word they're lobbying for their kids. We've actually heard of parents who become agents for their kids, all because of this fear-based kind of posture.
So can I give you some recent illustrations?
Yeah, please.
So in colleges that we have worked with, they'll remain nameless right now, the college staff have said parents have been known to bring their children home because they didn't like their roommates. My parents would have said, hey, you need to learn to get along with John.
That's
that sort of thing. But parents are bringing them home because they couldn't get along with a roommate. Parents have been known to pay sororities or fraternities to improve their children's applications. Kind of gets moved to the top of the stack.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I know one university, I won't share the name, that parents have actually paid up to $25,000 for Uber rides for their children if they get drunk at a party.
Mm.
So now, I'm not saying you don't want your child safe. I'm just saying, so you're planning that to be the answer.
Pre-planning for that to be a situation. Yes, yeah.
So
wild.
Parents have been known to write papers and essays for their children's classes because they're just too hard. And then lastly, we all know this, parents have been known to bribe college admission staff for entrance into the schools. The college entrance bribery scandal that recently surfaced in 2019, and now the sentences are being given to some of these sometimes celebrity parents who paid extra money to just get their kid into the college of choice.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It is so wild to me, the results of this, and it's obviously we can look at it and see the dangers of what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated by it.
So helicopter parenting has been a term that I've heard and read since 2002, so that's quite a few years.
Yeah.
It's now shifting. And I want to read a quick piece that I think sets up our conversation today, Andrew, really well. So journalist Claire Kane Miller and Jonah Engel Bromwich wrote this, and I quote, "Helicopter parenting, the practice of hovering anxiously near one's children, monitoring their every activity, is so 20th century. Some affluent mothers and fathers are now more like snowplows, machines chugging ahead, clearing out obstacles in their child's path to success so they don't have to encounter failure, frustration, or lost opportunities." It's a big difference.
Yeah.
It's one thing to hover. It's another thing to plow out everything that might be in the way.
Yeah. So. And as we talk about this terminology of snowplow, or based on where you are, sometimes I hear lawnmower,
you know, if you're in the South. Yeah.
But when we talk about that terminology, you can see parents start to put their heads down as they realize that's exactly I've done. Yeah.
And Andrew, it's not just affluent parents.
Correct.
So the recent research we picked up suggests that parents across lines of class and race are embracing the idea of intensive parenting, whether or not they can afford it.
Wow.
It's very interesting, isn't it?
Interesting, yeah.
So I just want to underscore right now, before we get into some solutions, listeners, you may have seen this, you may have practiced this, but we are the ones who, if there is a snowflake generation, we have created it by the way we've intruded so much. We meant to help, but we might have harmed.
And I want to highlight that word intrusive, because I think that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And if parents are being intrusive, we have to think about what are they being intrusive in on, right?
Yeah.
I might argue the mature development of their kids might be something they're intruding in on, right? The successful relationship of their kid and maybe a teacher or a coach, they're often intruding on that relationship. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things like that where they're not just intruding in their kids' lives. They're actually holding them back from achieving some of the things that they actually really need to achieve to be successful in life.
Yeah. So let me volley back on that. I think even the term safety has evolved. Safety for me growing up, maybe even for you growing up, was just don't break your leg or, you know, don't harm yourself.
Don't die,
physically.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Today, safety means we're afraid you might hear a speech on the college campus that might disagree with what you believe. And now I feel this is not safe. And I do believe in safe places emotionally, of course. We want our kids to not be stressed out. But my gosh, words aren't, I mean, we need to, by college especially, wouldn't you agree? We've got to be able to sift through ideas and say, I disagree, but thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
And be civil about it.
If you want to survive in the world, that's pretty important.
Yeah.
We have to be in contrarian physical environments, right? Be able to handle hard physical things, but also in contrarian intellectual environments and emotional environments. That's what resilience ultimately is about. Yeah. It has many different forms.
Yeah. So the term snowflake, what comes to your mind? Well, snowflakes are unique, right?
Yes.
Every snowflake's unique. Mm-hmm. And we want these kids to know you're very unique. You're very special.
Yeah.
They're fragile.
Yep.
And sometimes we have created an emotionally fragile. They're smart as anything. They're gifted. Their potential is great. You and I both believe in Generation Z. But we might have created a little bit of fragility in the way we didn't let them try it out and maybe fail along the way.
And I want to reiterate, that's not their lack of ability, right?
Yeah.
It's a natural result of not getting the opportunities that come along with real-world experience, doing hard things, building that resilience muscle.
Yeah, you're right. So a phrase that Gabby in our office, I think, coined, but I love it, I'm going to quote her now, is this, snowplow parents tend to raise snowflake kids.
Mm.
I want you to hear this again, listeners. If we're a snowplow parent, there's very likely going to be the chance that we end up with a snowflake young adult not quite ready for the rigors of adult life.
Yeah, that is so essential because oftentimes we think I need to do these activities to be a quote unquote good parent, but I also don't want my kid to turn out this way. And we need to realize those two things often go together.
Yeah.
So if you don't want your kid to turn out that way, you might want to start to challenge some of your assumptions about what successful parenting might look like.
So my wife and I had to start saying something to ourselves as we raised our children.
Okay.
Don't be intrusive, just be intentional. Don't be intrusive, just be... So intentionality, we are for, and I hope you are too, listeners.
Yeah.
Intentional in equipping and training and helping them learn to do their laundry, whatever it is. But yet intrusive crosses a line now where I'm doing too much and they're not able to do what they need to do.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Being intentional, not intrusive.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yep.
Well, you speak to, and as always, you've got really good advice on how to not find ourselves in the place we don't want to be. We actually talk through, and you've got four steps that we can take to avoid being a snowplow parent and actually to avoid ending up with a snowflake kid.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could walk us through those.
These are very easy to understand, and I'm hoping easy to begin to practice, but it may be a change. So whether you're driving or riding your bike or working out on a treadmill, I want you to consider these four simple ideas. Number one, ease them toward independence while they're still living with you. Okay, so if you're a parent and your child is 18 years old or younger, the best time for them to learn to do things on their own is when they're still at home. You know, they're still in the safety of mom and dad's roof, you know?
Yeah.
So the safest time for them to learn independence is when they're not independent, but they're learning almost like it's a simulator. Your house is a simulator for real life. So some of the things we did in our house, many, many parents did, but by early high school, my wife, Pam, was having our kids do their own laundry. Now, she was there to coach them and say, don't put whites with darks.
Yeah,
you know? And,
yeah.
And so that's cold water, that's hot water.
She was intentional.
Yes, she was. But she had them do it. And I was so proud of her to let them. So when they went off to college, it wasn't a big deal.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, they weren't weeping.
They knew how to work the machine.
They weren't weeping at the washer and dryer, okay? We challenged them when they wanted to buy a car to buy half the car. We paid for half and they paid for half. I don't know what your economic status is, listeners, but that seemed to be a workable deal for us. That made our kids choose a car that was affordable because they had to pay half of it, but yet they didn't have to fork out the $18,000 or $12,000 or whatever it was all by themselves. We, by age 12, had them resolve their own conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say Bethany was 14, Jonathan was 10, so average age 12.
Yeah.
They might have a fight. Well, take away the word might. They did have fights. But we said, now you guys need to go into somebody's room, go into one of your rooms and figure this out. We're not going to resolve it for you. Why? Because in just a few years, you're going to be at XYZ college and nobody's going to be there.
Yeah.
But Andrew, can I tell you something? I just met a dean at a university that said, we had a mom Skype call one of our students to resolve a conflict between her and her roommate over a peanut butter jar. I'm not joking.
Oh my
I'm thinking,
goodness.
Mom, I know you meant well. You're handicapping your daughter right now.
Yeah. So true. It's so true. Well, you and I both on the road get asked questions oftentimes like, when do I do this for my kid? Yeah. And when do I allow them to make decisions? And the way I always answer that question is every family's got to do it differently, but the right answer is always you need to be handing them more and more opportunity, more and more ownership as time goes on.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what you're talking
about. It really is. You're grading them up to adulthood. You're not raising children, you're raising future adults.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right, number two.
Number two. Combine autonomy with responsibility and increase these traits as they age. It's something you just alluded to.
Yeah.
So we feel like there's many great indicators of adult readiness, but two of the biggest categories are autonomy, which means I can do this on my own, and responsibility, which means I will own this task as if it were my own. So they may be sweeping out the garage, but sweetheart, sweep it like it was your garage. Okay. Now with Bethany, that didn't work really well because she couldn't care less. But
you've seen her garage since then, and
that's a whole other podcast for another day. But my point is these two things. Think about autonomy and responsibility. Now I always tried to combine that freedom that they were always asking for as a teenager with a corresponding responsibility and sense of ownership. So the illustration I always give, pardon me if you've heard me say this before, is before my children bought their own car, they had to borrow the family car, and I would say, if you take the car out on Friday night, fill up the tank with gas. It might just be half a tank. It might just be X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
But if they threw a conniption fit, we would go, this is better than buying the car.
Yeah.
You want to make a car payment on this one? And then, no, give me the keys. I'll fill up the tank.
Yeah.
So we had fun with it. We weren't being stupid about it, but we wanted our kids to know, you're going to have bills to pay.
Yeah.
This is a tiny bill.
Yeah.
So let's get used to it. If they wanted to stay out later at night and have a later curfew, show me you can do the current curfew right on time or early. Because one day you're going to have an employer who asks something and you can't fudge and go, I'll be 20 minutes late. Is that going to be okay with you? He'll say, no, here's the door.
Mm.
So again, we were always thinking about the future, and you and I both believe the deadlines are lifelines.
That's pretty important. So, yes.
Yes, it is.
Well, this happens a whole lot. And like you said, just to reiterate, the whole reason you do this is because that's what life is like,
that's
right?
Right. Yeah.
If they get out of your house and they haven't had a single balance of autonomy and responsibility, they're just not ready for it when it's going to hit them like a ton of bricks.
Andrew, we've shared this on the podcast before, so I won't make it long, but I love many of the high school principals that we meet. And one of our high school principals that's become a friend, East Paulding County, Regina has created a bank in the high school because she says, I want you to get ready for having money to manage. And so the students run the bank. They are the tellers. They are the managers. They're the marketers.
Love it.
So they're marketing to their fellow students to bank there.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm the principal. I bank there. The students know my salary because I put my pay. And I thought, this is awesome for established adults
to
help.
She put her money where her mouth was.
Literally.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Number three. The third idea is this. Don't do for them what they should do for themselves. always, always, always follow this principle as a rule. There are exceptions, but here's the rule. Don't do for them what they should do for themselves. Mm. So let me tell you why this has become a big deal to me. Some student affairs staff at universities tell me that their students' parents call them consistently about topics the students should figure out by college age. But they're constantly mitigating between this, and they'll often have to say, is your child over 18? Yes. Then he or she's an adult, and they should be figuring this out, you know, on their own. I talked to a staff member, you're not going to believe this, that said they're one of our freshman students. Now, it's a freshman, but she will talk to mom about what she should get at the dining hall, what kind of salad and what kind of meat should I get? And I'm going,
I need mom's advice three times a day when I'm walking in the cafeteria.
This is, I'm mad. I'm mad. Yeah. I will try to contain my anger. but I'm not mad, mom, because you don't love your child. Of course you love your child. I'm saying, what did you not do the first 18 years?
Yeah.
That she should be ready to choose her food items in the dining hall. So anyway, always, always be thinking, should they be able to do this on their own? If they're 18, would an average 18-year-old, yeah, they would be able to do this. Yeah. So,
well, yeah. I really love it. I don't know if you've seen this, but whenever I'm in a grocery store or something like that, and I see a parent have their young kid be the one who does the checkout with the checkout person,
I just think,
what a cool thing to do. Yeah. They're 12. Right. They can figure this out.
Yeah.
And it's so good to learn to socially interact with people you don't know in a transactional context. So I always think that's cool.
I do too. So I would say, parent, you need to think about the future again. Is it more efficient and faster to do it yourself at the grocery? Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
But the goal isn't efficiency right now.
Yep.
It's training.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. All right. The fourth idea that we're sharing in this podcast is simply this. Always ask yourself this question. Always ask yourself this question. Does helping them now hurt them in the long run? Does helping them now hurt them in the long run? I actually believe this is a great accountability question for parents. When you find yourself intruding in your teen's life, ask yourself if this is what's happening right now. It's going to make a better day right now, but it's going to make a rougher day, you know, 5 years from now. So does helping your child actually hurt them? That's really what we're saying here. So one phrase I've said over and over and over, again, pardon the repetition here, but I believe I am a better parent and, for that matter, educator if I understand this phrase. The further I can see out into the future, the better the decision I make today for my child.
Mm.
The further out I can see into the future, the better the decision I make today for my child. I don't want to hurt my child at 27 or 30 years old like you are. I just got to.
Because it's more dangerous, actually, for them to not be ready at that point than it is for them to not be ready right now.
The stakes are much higher.
Yeah.
And by the way, mom, dad, you wouldn't want this horrible confrontation to happen with a boss when they're 35. Well, you can preclude that if you're getting ready at 15.
Have that same confrontation.
Yeah, that's right. With a loving parent who hugs them and cries with them afterwards.
Yeah, which their boss is probably not going to do.
So. Probably not going to cry with them.
No.
Yes, that's right. So let me read something, Andrew, that I thought was a great capsule of this podcast today. So in a new poll by the New York Times and Morning Consult, a nationally representative group of parents of ages 18 to 28, so these are young adult children, 3/4 of these parents had made appointments for their adult children, like for a doctor visit or a haircut, and the same share had reminded them of deadlines for school, okay, according to this column. So parents, think about that. These are 18 to 28-year-olds, but 3/4 of them, parents are still doing things that they should be able to do themselves. Well, you might say, well, but they've never done it before. And I'm saying, well, darn it, they should have done it before.
Yeah, yeah.
So 11% said they would contact their child's employer if their child had an issue. Oh, my gosh, would that not go over well?
Oh.
16% of those children in college had texted or called them to wake them up so they didn't sleep through class. I know. I'm thinking the professors are probably livid. 8% had contacted a college professor or an administrator about their child's grades or a problem they were having.
Wow.
So mom and dad are acting like the agent you just mentioned.
Yeah.
I'm the agent. And I'm going, ah, this is not a good picture in the long run.
All these things are definition of what we're calling the snowplow parent, right?
Yeah.
The one who's just doing too much.
And this has led to too many snowflake kids. Now, thank God there's kids that are fully ready. We meet them all the time. I am loving it. But there's too many snowflake kids that could have been prevented from being a snowflake.
Yeah.
if they didn't have an
interest. Seeing into the future as a parent means that you choose some short-term painful conversations for long-term gain. And we've seen a number of parents who have said, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to experience this short-term pain, and I'm going to do my very best to get this kid ready. And you were just telling me you met one of those moms who's been doing this for a little while and kind of saw the end results of it.
So I had shared a phrase at a parent event that David Salyers, one of our former board members, had shared with me. A decision that you make that is based on short-term benefits, we're happier today, leads to long-term consequences.
Yeah.
If you make a decision that's short-term consequences, it's harder today, usually leads to long-term benefits.
Mm.
And so this mom, who was in attendance 4 years ago, took that to heart. And so this year I was doing another parenting event in that same community. She happened to come.
Okay, four years later.
Yeah, 4 years later. She came up to me and she said, do you remember me? And I said, I'm so sorry, I meet a lot of people. And she introduced herself and gave me the context. I said, oh, yes, I remember talking to you. And she said, well, I just wanted you to know, I really took to heart what you said from your book, 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid. And she said, I really looked at the mistakes I was making and I changed. I just wanted you to know I changed. And I said, well, I'm honored. Thank you so much for your child's sake. And she said, I want you to meet my child. And stepping out from behind her was her young teenage son, who was probably a freshman, maybe a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
And he smiled sheepishly at me and he said this, I've got it written down. He said, yep, she's finally letting go and it's helping me.
Wow.
I get a little teary. She's finally letting go, and it's helping me. And the mom was proud, and the son was going, thank you, sir.
Yes.
Whatever you said to her, thank you. So may this be the story that we hear over and over and over again in the years ahead.
Yeah, so good, so good. Thank you, Tim, so much for leading us in that conversation. Well, we mentioned it at the beginning of this podcast. We've got a brand new book out, Generation Z Unfiltered, and we actually talk about these issues in that book. And so if you're listening to this thinking, I want to dive deeper into this issue, into this conversation, maybe get a couple books, and have a conversation with other parents around me, we cannot more highly suggest this resource, not because we wrote it and we're awesome, but because we just really believe we had parents and leaders of all kinds in mind when we wrote this this resource. So Generation Z Unfiltered, you can get it at generationzunfiltered.com. It's available now. You can also find it on Amazon and all the other places that you shop for books. As always, if you would rate this podcast, that gets the word out about what we're doing here. 5 stars is preferable, but rate whatever you feel like you want to do. If you will also, if you want to follow us on social media, we love connecting with you there. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And then lastly, if you got ideas for things you want us to talk about on this podcast, people you want us to interview, conversations you would like for us to engage in, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those from you and hearing from you. Tim, thank you so much for leading us through this conversation, giving us such great, helpful advice. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.